Hello and welcome to Imran and Dan's Monday Blues podcast. This week we're going to be talking about blind musicians who probably have more of a reason than most to sing the blues.
And yeah, blind artists have actually got much more representation in blues than in other genres. Often they came from very poor backgrounds, normally rural as well, and have very little access to healthcare and even basic technology at the turn of the century and often even later into the 1930s.
So that left them obviously a lot more susceptible to health problems.
Yeah, I mean, they were very much bottom of the pile, obviously being black and handicapped. As a result, blind children were often encouraged to pick up instruments as it was the only sort of viable way of making money to survive. It was viewed at the time as sort of being essentially begging. But blind Gary Davis, an artist that we'll play later, said that when his mother found out he was blind, she saved up for about 3 or 4 years to buy him a guitar, and when he was 7, she bought him one and left him alone with it for a week. But our first artist is Blind Blake. He's one of the earliest blues singers. He was very popular at the time of his first recordings in 1926. However, his career ended abruptly in 1932 with Paramount's bankruptcy. That was his record company. But he still managed to record about 80 songs, I think.
Yeah, and beyond that, not really much is known about him. He ended up dying 2 years later in 1934 at the age of 38. But he's very influential in the blues. He's one of the earliest proponents of the Piedmont style, which we'll talk about later. And this is a good example of that one-time blues.
I ain't gonna call no more. Good man is hard to find. Mama will be your regular bitch. Who'll be your regular bitch?
So that was Blind Blake with One Time Blues. Next up, we've got another artist who recorded on Paramount Records.
Yeah, he was also prolific at the same kind of time as Blind Blake. It's Blind Lemon Jefferson. And Lemon's actually his real name, he was born with that name. He was born blind and became a street musician in his early teens, where he'd also play at parties, and according to his cousin, he'd play for 8 hours a night until about 4 in the morning. He was born in Texas and was known as the father of the Texas blues, but his style actually spanned many regional genres, and it was up in Chicago that he recorded. But he actually ended up dying in 1929, and his death still remains a mystery. We know that he died of a heart attack, but the circumstances are kind of unknown. Some say a jealous lover poisoned his coffee. Some say he was attacked by a dog at night.
Yeah, the one I heard was that he got lost on the way back from a party and he died in a snowstorm, I think on Christmas Day, reportedly.
Yeah, but in any case, he was only 36 years old and his style was seen as difficult to imitate by later musicians, but he has been covered by many later artists. This is one of my favourite of his songs, called See That My Grave Is Kept Clean.
Well, it one kind favour I ask of you. Well, it's one kind favour I ask of you. Lord, it's one kind favour I ask of you. See that my grave.
So that was Blind Lemon Jefferson with See That My Grave Is Kept Clean, and I'm pretty sure Bob Dylan covered that on his debut album.
Yeah, obviously Dylan was really influenced by these old blues men, especially our next artist, Blind William McTell, who we actually wrote a song about in 1983, where the lyrics in the chorus said, "I know nobody can sing the blues like Blind William McTell." But McTell was actually born in 1898 in Georgia, and he was born blind in one eye and then lost his remaining vision in his childhood. And he actually learnt to read and write music in Braille as a child, which is pretty amazing, seeing as most blues musicians couldn't even read and write music normally anyway. But he preferred to play a 12-string guitar, as its greater volume was better for street performing, and he was fairly well regarded during his lifetime, but unfortunately he died in 1959, just before the sort of revival of blues and folk music that occurred.
But he was fairly well recorded in his lifetime, and I think even Alan Lomax recorded him in 1940.
Yeah, but it wasn't until the Bob Dylan song named after him came out in the 80s that people sort of revisited him and realised just how influential he was. And this song that we're going to play, Statesboro Blues, has been covered by many artists, most famously by the Allman Brothers Band, and it's named after his hometown in Georgia.
Oh, me my traveling shoes. You know by that I've got them stitched for blue. Mama, sister got them, Addie got them, brother got them, friend got them, I got them. I woke up this morning, we had them stitched for blue. I looked over in the corner, grandma and grandpa had them too.
That was Blind Willie McTell with Statesboro Blues. Another good example, Dan, of the Piedmont style I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, basically Piedmont style is basically a finger-picking guitar style in which there's an alternating bass rhythm played with your thumb whilst your other fingers sort of pick the other strings and play the melody. It's very much ragtime influence method. Our next artist, Reverend Gary Davis, plays also in this style. He was born in North Carolina to a poor family of 10. He was brought up by his grandmother. In the 1920s, he went to Durham in North Carolina, where there was a big Piedmont blues scene, and it was a big centre for black culture at the time. He also, like Blind Willie, played a 12-string guitar, and he was first recorded with it in 1935. Shortly afterwards, he converted to Christianity, and hence the name Reverend. He was known as either Blind Gary Davis or Reverend Gary Davis.
But he wasn't actually a reverend.
No, he was. He was actually ordained as a minister.
Oh, right.
He played the blues, but later he played more and more inspirational sort of gospel music. Before his rediscovery, in inverted commas, the 1960s, Alan Lomax's wife, Elizabeth Harold, recorded conversations with him and transcribed his life story, which came to be about 300 pages. Luckily, due to his presence in the folk revival in the 1960s, there's some really good videos of him on YouTube, including a very arty 10-minute documentary recorded in New York, in which he plays a few songs and talks about what the blues means. But the track we're going to play is called You Can Go Home, which is a good example, again, of a Piedmont style.
Have a mother that won't treat you right. Take it to yourself in God alone. Tell your mother she treated you wrong. You can go home. You can go home. You can go home. Tell your mother she treated you wrong.
That was You Can Go Home by Reverend Gary Davis. And haven't we got another North Carolina native coming up now?
Yeah, we're going to play Sonny Terry, one of my personal favourite blues artists. He plays in quite a folk bluesy style. He's a very influential and renowned harmonica player. He was known for imitating trains and fox chases, as well as whooping and hollering.
Yeah, we're going to have a harmonica special coming up soon, and I'm sure he'll feature in that one as well.
Yeah, he certainly will. He was blind by the age of 16 due to a number of farming accidents. And as we sort of touched on before, he took up playing harmonica full-time as a means of income. And he formed a very successful partnership with Blind Boy Fuller in North Carolina on the streets.
Yeah, I've sort of known him because he also collaborated with Brownie McGee a lot as well.
Yeah, Blind Boy Fuller actually died prematurely. And as you say, he went on to form a long-standing musical relationship with Brownie McGee, who was also disabled. He had polio as a kid, which incapacitated one leg. And he released an album called Cripple Creek in the 50s, I think.
And Sonny Terry as well performed in the concerts we were talking about last week, the Spirituals to Swing concerts in New York.
Yeah, he played in 1938, and it was a year after that he was actually recorded as well for the Library of Congress. He made his first recordings in 1940, including this very popular song called Old Jabbo, about a man who's bitten by a snake, and we're going to play that one now. In the 40s and 50s, he played alongside Leadbelly, Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger in New York, and later in his career, along with Brownie McGee, he toured Europe extensively. And I think there's actually a number of recordings made by the BBC in the 70s, which are available on YouTube.
So as always, this and all the other tracks we've played today are available as links in the description below.
So yeah, thank you very much for listening. And this is Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee with Old Jabbo.
Old Jabbo went to that field. That big snake bit him on his heel. He turned around and do his best. Fell right back in a haunted nest. But he jumped any way he ran. Couldn't catch the bull in a half man. Old Jabbo don't have no shoes. That's why he got them run.